ಕಪಿತೃಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪ ಸಿಂಧು ಭೈಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಪತಿತನಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. Prithu Maharaj, the beginning of the sacrifice he was to perform, dressed in the sacrificial clothing and looking very beautiful, addressed the citizens who had gathered there to participate in the sacrifice. And he thanked them very sincerely and profusely for them cooperating with his performance of his duty. He described how his duty as the king, which was given to him by the Lord, it was to rule, to engage the citizens, to protect the citizens. This was his prescribed duty, given in the Shastra. So he was performing his duty, and part of that duty was to engage the citizens in performing their prescribed duties. And he was requesting the citizens to cooperate with him in their performance of their own prescribed duties according to the Shastra. So he described how, first of all, how they should do this. But not only just do one's duty, thinking by this duty I'm going to enjoy myself because I'm going to gain so many material things by my work, even by Shastra. No! He encouraged them to not be in that consciousness, but to be in Krishna consciousness, to do the occupational duties according to Shastra, but for whose pleasure? To perform them in such a way that Krishna is satisfied. Yatta pravata bhutanam dina savamidam tatam. Oh, my dear Lord, I am doing this for your pleasure. So if we can surrender to that consciousness, which Prabhupada summarized by quoting the Bhagavad Gita verse, yat karosi rajnasi, yat johosi vidatiyat, yat tapasyasi kantayat, tat karusva marapuram, which is the basic definition of nishkam karma yoga, detached dutiful work. And by performing detached dutiful work, the result of that for Krishna's pleasure, the result of that is one gradually becomes fully situated in the mode of goodness, and one realizes his eternal relationship with Krishna. One comes to the higher level of bhakti, where one is giving everything of himself to Krishna, fully purified. So then after encouraging the citizens and thanking them for their cooperative spirit, and do it, he said, out of love for me, because if you perform your activities nicely, it will be so pious, and I will gain pious credits, because the ruler gains what percentage was it? I don't remember. One sixth of the pious credits of everything performed by the citizens. So imagine what an accumulation of piety he'll get if the citizens are pious. And on the other hand, if the citizens are impious, then so many impious reactions go to him. And as a result of that, he loses his good fortune in this life, and in his next life, he's going to really have to suffer. So he was begging the citizens, please, please be merciful to me. So this is the very organized system that the Lord has set the rules for in the Vedic scriptures, but also more than just setting the rules in the Vedic scriptures, he's additionally set the laws of material nature up in such a way the material nature works according to these laws. So he described that for there, the proof of the fact that there are, that there is a lawgiver, an awarder, is that there must be an awarder. There must be a controller. Because how could the laws of material nature work unless they were being enforced, organized, set out and enforced by a controller? So nothing, Prabhupada explains, happens just by chance. Why is it, if it's by chance, why is it that one person and another person have similar desires and work similarly as hard but get completely different results from their work? So there must be an awarder. It is not by chance. And then Prabhupada explained there is the element of chance, and he took the word somewhat differently. He explained there is order and chance, organization, planning, and chance. And the planning comes by the Lord, by Krishna, coming himself to this world on schedule as an incarnation. He comes to this world, he sends his devotees to this world, and the chance is that he gives the living entity an opportunity to associate with the devotees, give them a chance to associate with the Lord and his devotees and take very seriously the spiritual life. So that is the chance. So he's proving, Prithu Maharaj was proving logically, and then he also mentioned that the Shastras also say that there is a Supreme Lord, a Supreme Controller, and then he also said that the great authorities who have studied the Shastras, they live their lives accepting that Supreme Controller. So from every point of view, there is a Supreme Lord. So in text 31, he continues speaking about this, and he's going to continue to glorify. He's moved from asking Prithu Maharaj, he's moved from asking the citizens to follow the laws of nature, the laws of the Vedas, the Shastra, so that they can enjoy in this life and in the next life, and so he will be able to by following their prescribed duties. And then he's moved from that point to saying that there's a prescriber of the duties and a rewarder of the results of one's work. And now he's going to further glorify that rewarder, that Lord, that controller. Text 31. So he's describing, since that Lord is there, what is our relationship with him? We should take shelter of him. Why? By the inclination, this is text 31, yat parasiva virachis tapasvinam, by the inclination, abiruchi, ruchi means the taste or the inclination, by the inclination to serve the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, suffering humanity can immediately cleanse the dirt which has accumulated in their minds during innumerable births. So what is the result of following, of having an inclination or following that inclination? Is the heart can be cleansed. Cheto darpana marjanam. And then the result of cleansing of the heart is bhavamaha devagni narapanam. The forest fire of material existence, the suffering, is removed. Like the Ganges water which emanates from the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord, such a process of serving the Lord immediately cleanses the mind, and the spiritual or Krishna consciousness gradually increases. Here's Prabhupada's purport. In India, one can actually see that a person who takes a bath in the Ganges waters daily is almost free from all kinds of diseases. A very respectable Brahmin in Calcutta never took a doctor's medicine. Even though he sometimes felt sick, he would not accept medicine from the physician, but would simply drink Ganges water, and he was always cured within a very short time. The glories of Ganges water are known to Indians and to ourselves also. So raise your hand if you have taken bath in the Ganga. You? Is Ganga in Ranagat? So I remember when I was going to India for the first time, I had an anxiety. What happens if I bathe in the Ganges, the Ganga, but it feels just like an ordinary river? Now what am I going to think? What am I going to say? But it doesn't. It isn't. It's very, very, very special. Why? Prabhupada will explain. The Ganges, the river Ganges, flows by Calcutta. Sometimes within the water there are many stools and other dirty things which are washed from the neighboring mills and factories. But still, thousands of men take their baths in the Ganges water. And they are very healthy as well as spiritually inclined because everything is cleansed. That is the effect of Ganges water. The Ganges is glorified because it emanates from the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, if one takes to the service of the lotus feet of the Lord or takes to Krishna consciousness, he is immediately cleansed of many dirty things which have been accumulated in his innumerable births. So here is the analogy that's given in the verse, that bathing in the Ganges is purifying to the heart, and it makes removes the contaminations from the consciousness, from the chitta, from the mind, and it brings out the inclination to serve Krishna. Now why? Because it has touched the lotus feet of the Lord. It is coming from the lotus feet of the Lord. And therefore, the conclusion is that if one serves the lotus feet of the Lord, then that same result will come, the cleansing of the heart. Now, here's an example. We have seen that in spite of the very black record of their past lives, persons who take to Krishna consciousness become perfectly cleansed of all dirty things and make spiritual progress very swiftly. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj advises that without the benediction of the Supreme Lord, one cannot make advancement, either in so-called morality, economic development, or sense gratification. One should therefore take to the service of the Lord or Krishna consciousness and thus very soon become a perfect man, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Chipram Bhavati Dhamma Marshashvak Chantim Gashtati. Very quickly he becomes righteous if one is a devotee. Kaunteya Pratitani Hiname Bhakti Pranashati. So that is what Prithu Maharaj really wants the citizens to do. He wants them to take shelter of Krishna and perform their prescribed duties. Being a responsible king, Prithu Maharaj recommends that everyone take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus be immediately purified. Lord Sri Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita that simply by surrendering unto him, one is immediately relieved of all sinful reactions. As Krishna takes away all the sinful reactions of a person, immediately upon his surrender unto him, similarly the external manifestation of Krishna, the representative of Krishna, who acts as the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, takes all the resultant actions of the sinful life of the disciple immediately after the disciple's initiation. Thus, if the disciple follows the principles instructed by the spiritual master, he remains purified and is not contaminated by material infection. So this is also described in other places, other shastras, Bhakti Samhita Sindhu, other places in the Bhagavatam, how at initiation, or even just by the association, seeing a devotee, but especially by initiation, one's karma, sinful reactions are removed. But then the question may be asked, is if I didn't have any karma at all, then what would happen to my body? If there was no karma pushing it, what would happen to the body? It would die immediately. And yet we find that after initiation, it's not like your name is something other and then the person drops dead. It doesn't happen like that. How can we reconcile this? So there's different stages of karma. The Shastras, Padma Purana explains, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu explains. One is called Aparapta. And this is the karma that one has accumulated for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of lifetimes. And then there is Parabdha karma. That is the karma that is experienced in this body, the karma that this body is carrying. So the Parabdha karma, it is not taken exactly at the time of initiation, but the Aparabdha karma, so many sins from so many lives are burnt. And therefore, the example that Prabhupada gave is the fan. It is like the electricity being cut off. Let us do a scientific experiment for a moment. Who will turn off the fan? And we will all observe what will the result will be. Could someone turn off the fan? Just for a moment. And we will see. And this is what it's like. There's no more electricity, but yet the fan is still moving. That is the Parabdha karma. The moving fan is the Parabdha karma, our body. Now we can turn it on again, that we have now. And this having a body is a facility, actually. The Parabdha karma, Krishna not taking the Parabdha karma, is a facility to the devotee so that he can develop, he can mature in his devotional service. He can rise to the platform of prema bhakti, because unless one is on an exalted platform of devotional service, he cannot go back to the spiritual world. So having the body is a gift in that sense. The Parabdha karma, the spinning fan without electricity pushing it further, is a gift by Krishna to develop our Krishna consciousness deeply. That is the opportunity. And therefore, if there's no more electricity or fruit of activity added to, no more electricity added to the fan, as soon as the electricity is added back on, the slowing down stops and it again speeds up. So similarly, if we perform no more fruit of activity, if we do everything in the service of Krishna, then the fan of our karma will eventually stop and the disciple will remain forever purified because he's not added any more karma. And then the last paragraph. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore states that the spiritual master who plays the part of Krishna's representative has to consume all the sinful reactions of the disciple. Consumes them. Sometimes the spiritual master takes the risk of being overwhelmed by the sinful reactions of the disciple. And he undergoes a sort of tribulation due to their acceptance. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore advised that one not accept many disciples. So the main thrust of the verse is that one should take shelter. He's telling the citizens, Preacher Maharaj is telling the citizens to take shelter of the Lord, to serve the lotus feet of the Lord, and the heart will become purified. To act for his pleasure. Text 32. When a devotee takes shelter, so what is that's what one should do, knowing that the Lord is there. And then what is the result? Purification. And when a devotee takes shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is completely cleansed of all misunderstanding or mental speculation. Then he manifests renunciation. No more attached to the material world. This is possible only when one is strengthened by practicing bhakti yoga. Once having taken shelter at the root of the lotus feet of the Lord, a devotee never comes back to this material existence, which is full of the threefold miseries. So he goes, he takes shelter of Krishna and goes back to Krishna. Tava paramula, the root sometimes Krishna. His lotus feet are called mula, the root, because from that the body is growing like a tree. From its roots, it's resting on the rest of the tree is resting upon the roots. So suddenly the whole body is resting upon the Lord's feet. Prabhupada's purport. We'll read the first paragraph. As stated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikastak instructions, by the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, or by the process of hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord, one's mind is gradually cleansed of all dirt. Due to our material association since time immemorial, we have accumulated heaps of dirty things in our minds. The total effect of this takes place when a living entity identifies himself with his body and is thus entrapped by the stringent laws of material nature and put into the cycle of repeated birth and death under the false impression of bodily identification. When one is strengthened by practicing bhakti yoga, in other words, when one's realizations become strong, his mind is cleansed of this misunderstanding, and he is no longer interested in material existence or in sense gratification. And this is really what is required, and we can sort of gradually, casually meander along in our Krishna consciousness. But at the time of death, if we have attachment to the body, and we haven't developed attachment for Krishna, how much anxiety we're going to be in, how much fear, terror, abject, complete terror when the body fails us. What will we hold on to? What will we hold on to that will give us shelter unless we have developed detachment from matter, especially the body, bodily identification, cleansed of all misunderstandings and having taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. So this is the weight, the responsibility that we carry in our human life. So, text 33, this topic about taking shelter of the Lord and the glories of the Lord in his position goes on until text 36. Prithu Maharaj advised the citizens further, engaging your minds, your words, your bodies, and the results of your occupational duties, and being open-minded, open-hearted, open-minded. You should all render devotional service to the Lord with everything, according to your abilities and the occupations in which you are situated. You should engage your service at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with full confidence and without reservation. What is the full confidence that Krishna will protect? Then you will surely be successful in achieving the final objective in your life. We'll read that on page 102 near the end. So who should engage in devotional service? Who can engage in devotional service? He's talking to all the citizens there, and they're all individuals, and they all have their prescribed duties according to their position and shastra. So what is the prerequisite for engaging in this devotional service? So Prabhupada explains, anyone can become successful in devotional service provided he displays no duplicity. It is explained here that one must be very frank and open-minded. Amayinaha. What's the word by word? Without reservation. Open-minded. Give oneself completely. Without reservation. Holding back. Open-hearted, open-minded. Giving oneself completely without duplicity. To be situated in a lower status of life is not a disqualification for success in devotional service. The only qualification is that whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra, he must be open, frank, and free from reservations. Then, by performing his particular occupational duty under the guidance of a proper spiritual master, he can achieve the highest success of life. Text 34. Now, moving back a bit to glorification of the Lord and its relationship with the sacrifices, that performing one's prescribed duties naturally gives forth. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental and is not contaminated by this material world. So the idea is, if Krishna is being, say, if I'm contaminated and I'm offering a sacrifice to Krishna, does he become contaminated by that sacrifice? No. The point is that Krishna is completely transcendental. But how could he, being transcendental, what is it in the sacrifice? Because the people often are materialistic. They're performing their sacrifice primarily to get their own needs met, selfish. So how does something selfishly performed satisfy the Lord who is transcendental? So he is transcendental and not contaminated by this material world. But although he is concentrated spirit without material variety, has no material variety, for the benefit of the conditioned souls, he nevertheless accepts different types of sacrifice performed with various material elements. So this is describing, this verse describes, how is it that matter can please the Lord who is spirit, who is transcendental? How is it that matter pleases him? Because what's being offered by the citizens, even with material motives, is material things. So, for the benefit of the conditioned souls, he nevertheless accepts different types of sacrifices performed with various material ingredients, rituals, and mantras, and offered to the demigods under different names according to the interests and purposes of the performers. We'll read a few sentences into Prabhupada's purport. The purpose of performing yajna is to get material benefit. But, because the aim is to simultaneously satisfy the Supreme Lord, such yajnas have been recommended in the Vedas. Such performances are, of course, known as karma kanda, or material activities. And all material activities are certainly contaminated by the three modes of material nature. Generally, the karma kanda ritualistic ceremonies are performed in the mode of passion. Yet the conditioned souls, both human beings and demigods, are obliged to perform these yajnas because without them one cannot be happy at all. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments that these karma kanda ritualistic ceremonies, although contaminated meaning not done with the pure desire to please Krishna, they're done with fruitive motives. Although contaminated, they contain touches of devotional service. Because whenever there is a performance of any yajna, Lord Vishnu is given a central position. This is very important because even a little endeavor to please Lord Vishnu is bhakti and is of great value. A tinge of bhakti purifies the material nature of the performances, which by devotional service gradually comes to the transcendental position. Therefore, although such yajnas are superficially material activities, the results are transcendental. Very interesting. How powerful is bhakti, even though everything that is done in the performance is contaminated on one level by the material motives of the person doing the sacrifice, and he's using only material things because it's done to please Krishna, even if that's just a small part of it is done to please Krishna. The result of that small transcendental part will ultimately make the entire thing, the entire performance, the entire consciousness of the living entity transcendental. And then Prabhupada continues later on in the purport. The performer of sacrifices must always keep in view that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas are meant to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu Aradhyate Panta. Anything material or spiritual done for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord is understood to be an actual jagya, sacrifice. This is what sacrifice means, ultimately. And this, according to what Prithumraj explained earlier, is why sacrifices work. Because they are set up for Krishna, by Krishna. And therefore, when his rules are being followed, sacrificing our own independent tendency, following his rules, the result is that he's pleased. So one should keep in mind, even when, especially when performing even the Sankirtan Jagya, is that what is the purpose of it? The purpose is to please Krishna. Let you, my dear Lord, be pleased by what I'm doing, even though I have so many contaminations within me. My motives are karab. They're impure. They're rotten, maybe. But yet I'm doing this in this way for your pleasure, despite everything. May you be pleased by it. And by the kindness of the Lord, by acting in that way, even though there's so much imperfection in the work, he seizes out the good, the transcendental, and gradually that spark of transcendence, bhakti, action for the pleasure of Krishna, is fanned and increases until it burns out all contamination. So the performer of sacrifices, so this is a higher consciousness when one is remembering constantly, Krishna, please be pleased by this. And it is done in such a way that he will be pleased. So the performer of sacrifices must always keep in view that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas are meant to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anything material or spiritual done for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord is understood to be an actual jagya. And by performing such jagyas, one gets liberation from material bondage. So there is the Karmakanda Vedic way, which is indirect way to satisfy the Lord. I am going to him for my material needs through the demigods and through the ritualistic ceremonies. So that's indirect. And the direct method of gaining liberation from material bondage is devotional service, comprising the nine following methods: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Matmanavedanam. This ninefold process is described in this verse as Vishuddha Vijnana Ghana, or satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly by transcendental knowledge concentrated on the form of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. This is the best method for satisfying the Supreme Lord. In other words, the consciousness is engaged always in hearing and chanting and glorifying him for his pleasure. One who cannot take to the direct process, however, should take to the indirect process, selfish desires, but done in try to be satisfied in such a way that Krishna is pleased. So one who cannot do the direct process should take to the indirect process of performing jagya for the satisfaction of Vishnu or jagya. Vishnu is therefore called Jagyapati, Shriyapatim, Jagapatim, Jagyapatim, in the second canto. And then in the last part of the purport. Generally, a conditioned soul has the determination for material profit. It's natural. That's why we're in the material world. We are self-interested, self-centered. But when these desires for material profit are satisfied through performance of jagya, one gradually achieves the spiritual platform. Then his life becomes perfect. Srimad Bhagavatam therefore recommends akama savakama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogini ajita prushapara. Everyone, whether akam, savakam, a devotee is akam, savakam has all desires, akami, a moksha kama or jnani or yogi, everyone is encouraged to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the direct method of devotional service. In this way, one can get both material and spiritual profit simultaneously. So much of the fourth canto is an enlargement of this verse from the second canto of Akama Sava Kama Va, that everyone, even if you desire a kingdom greater than Brahma's, like Dhruva Maharaj, worship the Lord. Don't worship the demigods. Just worship the Lord. Text 35. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-pervading, but He is also manifested in different types of bodies which arise from a combination of material nature, time, desires, and occupational duties. Listen to this. Did that just pop? No. It almost sounds as if the Lord manifests, He takes on a different material body, different kinds of material bodies. Is that true? Well, listen to what it says. The Supreme Personality of God, it is all-pervading. But he is also manifested in different types of bodies which arise from a combination of material nature, time, desires, and occupational duties. It almost sounds as if the Lord is Brahman and He comes and He takes the Brahman, gets bewildered in some form or another, like the Mayavadis say, and then comes as the jiva. But that's not the meaning. The idea is that the Lord, although he's all pervading as the super soul. And that super soul, Tiridakshaya Vishnu, he manifests himself along with the jiva in so many different material bodies of different sizes and shapes and varieties that the jiva takes according to his karma, according from the external causes, according to the material nature, time, desires, and occupational duties. And then, because of his desires, the jiva takes those bodies and the soul, savasya cham ride sanavisto, the paramatma is with him. And then according to the body, consciousness develops. Just as fire, which is always basically the same, blazes in different ways according to the shape and dimension of firewood. So fire is always the same, so consciousness is always the same. But how the fire manifests depends upon the fuel, the wood, and similarly, how consciousness manifests depends upon the body, even though consciousness has nothing to do with the body. It's a symptom of the soul. It's an emanation from the soul. So the limit, so that manifests differently. The consciousness manifests differently. We'll read from in the second half of the purport. The first complete paragraph of page 108 begins. According to the development of consciousness, so everyone has their consciousness according to the bodies. And according to the consciousness, God realization is present, or the capacity for God realization is present. In the human form of life, it is recommended, therefore, that one undergo the different types of penances and austerities described in the Bhagavad Gita, karma yoga, jnana yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. Like a staircase, yoga has different steps for reaching the topmost floor. And according to one's position upon the staircase, he is understood to be situated in karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, bhakti yoga. So human life, our business is to purify the consciousness. And the Vedic system, as we've been hearing about karma kanda, karma yoga, then jnana yoga, gradual purification of consciousness. That is the purpose of human life. And the top rung of this yoga ladder of purification of consciousness is bhakti yoga. And the topmost position in bhakti yoga is prema, love for Krishna. In other words, according to one's development in consciousness, one realizes his spiritual identity. And thus, when one's existential position is purified fully, he becomes situated in Brahmananda, which is ultimately unlimited. So one type of consciousness, if it's developed, one goes to Brahman. Therefore, the Sankirtan movement contributed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Lord Chaitanya, is the direct and easiest process from coming to the purest form of consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So use the human life. The injunction is that we should use our human life to advance. Advance means purify our consciousness. Don't contaminate the consciousness further. It's very hard to be serious like that in this material world. Very difficult to say in a determined way and act accordingly that I'm not going to do anything except purify my consciousness and develop my love for Krishna. So the first point is purify the consciousness. Then don't take the step-by-step gradual process. First I'll become a jnani. So I realize Brahman, and then after I realize Brahman, then I'll realize, become a yogi and realize Paramatma, and then I'll be qualified to take the bhakti yoga. No. Lord Chaitanya has made it easy and direct. Sankirtan, chanting the holy names of the Lord. Param Vajayate Sukrishna Sankirtan. And everything is realized in that way directly. Directions for performing different types of yajnas are specifically arranged for the highest realization of the Supreme Lord, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord Himself. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is realized according to the proportion of one's surrender. So in karma yoga, one is surrendering to one degree. In jnana yoga, one is surrendering to another degree. And in astanga yoga, one is surrendering. And bhakti yoga, one can surrender completely. And according to how much one surrenders, gives himself to Krishna, then Krishna reveals himself to the devotee. And therefore, Sri Maharaj said in the previous verse that surrender should be done without reservation, fully. And then finally, he's going to change the topic after text 36. He again thanks the citizens, goes back to that, for their combined effort and their helping. This is very good psychology and very sincere too. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master and enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. So he's telling the citizens, we're performing a sacrifice, but it's for Krishna's pleasure. We should always keep this in mind. And he is the supreme spiritual master as well. All of you citizens on the surface of the globe who have a relationship with me and are worshipping him by dint of your occupational duties are bestowing your mercy upon me. Therefore, all my citizens, I thank you. You're allowing me to do my service just right. And that is pleasing to Krishna. So you are assisting me in pleasing Krishna. And how much appreciative he was. And Prabhupada actually was in the right mood too. That exact mood of that. He appreciated the devotees. Because he wanted to please Krishna and please pleasing his spiritual master, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur. And he appreciated his disciples' service so much because they were assisting him, helping him in pleasing his spiritual master. So he saw that Pritam Raj is saying, you're bestowing your mercy upon me by doing your duties properly. So what a wonderful way to be thinking. Because usually when one thinks of the king, he thinks of the Lord. He's the powerful one, and he's got his pride, etc. One thinks even of the spiritual master. One thinks of him as a master. But the master, the king, they don't think of themselves as masters. They think of themselves as the appreciating servants of their subordinates. Yet their service is to rule, to guide, to govern. So they do their service, but internally they are very thankful for the cooperation of the subordinates. Therefore, O my citizens, I thank you. Now, from text 37 to 44, Pritam Raj continues, and the instructions of Pritam Raj will end to his citizens, will end at 44. Described up to this point about one should perform one's occupational duties for the pleasure of Krishna. So where does this tendency come from to do that? Because we have so many other tendencies in this world, and we see there are thousands and millions and now billions of people in this world who have very little tendency to act for the pleasure of God, especially continuously and without any motivation. So where does that seed come from? That seed that will gradually grow into pure devotional service. So it is very important that we understand this, and how, because it also is strongly connected to maintaining one's devotional service. And so much of that is relevant because it deals with dealing with the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. In our case, mostly there's no difference between the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas, but and Prabhupada explains in purports that if one's a Vaishnava, although the verses speak mostly about the Brahmins, the topmost of Brahmins is a Vaishnava. And one who is a Vaishnava, he is one who is, because he's transcended the mode of goodness, he's more than being in the mode of goodness, he knows more than Brahman, he knows the Parabrahman. So one who is a Vaishnava is naturally and automatically a Vaishnava, is also a Brahmin as well. So to maintain our Krishna consciousness, we need to follow these instructions from 37 to 44. How to become fixed. The Brahmins and Vaishnavas are personally glorified by their characteristic power of tolerance, penance, knowledge, and education. By dint of all these spiritual assets, Vaishnavas are more powerful than royalty. So the king is saying this. It is therefore advised that the princely order not exhibit its material prowess before these two communities and should avoid offending them. So Pritam Raj knew this very clearly from the history of his father, Vena, who completely disregarded the advice of the Vaishnavas, the Brahmins and Vaishnavas who came to him and told him, they advised him how to rule. And he thought, I'm the king, how can anyone tell me what to do? And they ended up killing him by their curse. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So he's warning, don't think you are more powerful than the Vaishnavas. No matter how much power one has to be very careful in dealings with the Vaishnavas. Purport. Pritam Raj has explained in the previous verse the importance of devotional service for both the rulers and the citizens of the state. Now he explains how one can be steadily fixed in devotional service. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while instructing Srila Rupa Goswami, has compared the devotional service of the Lord with a creeper. A creeper has a feeble stem and requires the support of another tree to grow. And while growing, it requires sufficient protection so that it may not be lost. While describing the system of protection for the creeper of devotional service, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has especially stress, protection from offenses unto the lotus feet of Vaishnavas. Such offenses are called Vaishnava Aparad. Aparad means offense. If one commits Vaishnava Aparad, all his progress in devotional service will be checked. Even though one is very much advanced in devotional service, if he commits offenses at the feet of a Vaishnava, his advancement is all spoiled. In the Shastras, it is found that a very great yogi, Devasa Muni, committed a Vaishnava Aparad, and thus for one full year had to travel all over the universe, even to Vaikuntha Loka, to defend himself from the offense. At last, even when he approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vaikuntha, he was refused protection. Therefore, one should be very careful about committing offenses at the feet of a Vaishnava. The worst kind of offense is Vaishnava Aparad, and the most grievous Vaishnava Aparad is called Guru Aparad, which refers to offenses at the lotus feet of the spiritual master. In the chanting of the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this Guru Aparad is considered the most grievous offense. Guru Avagya Shruti Shastra Nindanam. Among the 10 offenses committed against the chanting of the holy name, the first offenses are disobedience of the spiritual master and blasphemy of the Vedic literature. The simple definition, so we're thinking of, oh, I better be very careful about committing offenses to Vaishnavas, those great souls who are the most exalted devotees in the movement or whatever. But what is the next line that Prabhupada says when he's talking about the dangers of Vaishnava Aparad? And the next line is, the simple definition of Vaishnava is given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a person who immediately reminds one of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is a Vaishnava. Prabhupada, in the early days of the movement, he introduced as part of the morning program, as part of the sadhana, the offering of obeisances. Vanja Kalpaturvyas Chakripas in the way of Chapatitanam Pabinabhyo Vaishnavyanamama to the devotees, to each other, so that they, because living in the temple, in the community of devotees, is very good, but there is one danger in it, and that is that the tendency is to become overly familiar and critical and offend each other. So therefore he introduced the system of offering obeisances and asking for forgiveness daily. Prabhupada continues later on in the purport. Prithu Maharaj warns his citizens who are actually engaged in the devotional service of the Lord to take care against offenses to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Offenses at their lotus feet are so destructive that even the descendants of Yadu, who were born in the family of Lord Krishna, were destroyed due to offenses at their feet. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot tolerate any offense at the lotus feet of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Sometimes, due to their powerful positions, princes or government servants neglect the position of Brahmins and Vaishnavas, not knowing that because of their offenses they will be ruined. So some terror should enter our hearts on hearing this. And this is the prime way to maintain steady devotional service, to avoid offending the devotees. More instructions on how to deal with the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ancient eternal Godhead, who is the foremost amongst all great personalities, obtained the opulence of his staunch reputation, which purifies the entire universe by worshipping the lotus feet of those Brahmins and Vaishnavas. So this is encouragement to be very, very careful. The example is given how Krishna did this. Krishna worships Sudama Brahmana, when he came, he was the king in Dwarka. And Sudama Brahmana walked right into the palace, and Krishna sat him down on his own bedstead and offered arti to him and washed his feet. So very, very carefully Krishna set the example how to deal with the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is everlasting, independent, and who exists in everyone's heart, is very pleased with those who follow in His footsteps and engage without reservation in the service of the descendants of Brahmins and Vaishnavas. For He is always dear to Brahmins and Vaishnavas, and they are always dear to Him. By regular service to the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, one can clear the dirt from his heart and thus enjoy supreme peace and liberation from material attachment and be satisfied. In this world, there is no fruit of activity superior to serving the Brahmana class, so nothing can be done on the fruit of level that will bring as great results as serving the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. For this can bring pleasure to the demigods, for whom the many sacrifices are recommended. So if the purpose of the sacrifice of the fruit of activity is to please the demigods and ultimately to please the Lord, this is how Krishna is pleased, by the service of the Vaishnavas. And even the demigods are more pleased when the Brahmins and Vaishnavas are served. We'll read some of the purports. Tandera Shivanottama Das Thakur therefore says, Tandera Charana Seli Bhakta Sanivas Janame Hoy E Avilas. Birth after birth, I desire to serve the lotus feet of the Acharyas and live in a society of devotees. A spiritual atmosphere can be maintained only by living in a society of devotees and by serving the orders of the Acharyas. The spiritual master is the best Brahmana. At present, in the age of Kali, it is very difficult to render service to the Brahman Kula or the Brahmana class. So after so much glorification of the Brahmanas, Prabhupada is now saying that it's very difficult to serve them. Why? And therefore the stress will always be given to serving the Vaishnavas. Why? According to the Varaha Purana, the difficulty is, according to the Varaha Purana, is that demons, taking advantage of Kali Yuga, have taken birth in Brahmana families. Rakshasha Kalim Ashritya Jayante Brahma Yonishu, from Varaha Purana. In other words, in this age there are many so-called caste brahmanas and caste goswamis who, taking advantage of the shastra and the innocence of people in general, claim to be brahmanas and vaishnavas by hereditary right. One will not derive any benefit by rendering service to such false brahmana kulas, the families of the brahmanas, just because someone is born in a family of a brahmana. One must therefore take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and his associates, and should also render service to them. For such activity will greatly help the neophyte in attaining full satisfaction. This has been very clearly explained by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his explanation of the verse Vyavya Satmika Buddhi Ekeha Kuru Nandana. By actually following the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga as recommended by Srila Narottama Das Thakur, one can very quickly come to the transcendental platform of liberation, as explained in this verse. Text 41. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ananta, eats through the fire sacrifices offered in the names of the different demigods, he does not take as much pleasure in eating through fire as he does in accepting offerings through the mouths of learned sages and devotees. For then, he does not leave the association of devotees. So now, all these glorifications and comparative statements are being made about the different ways to please the Lord, and what is coming as the supreme way, better than sacrifices, offering ghee and sacrifice to the fire, is to feed the devotees. Prabhupada's purport. According to Vedic injunctions, a fire sacrifice is held in order to give food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the names of the different demigods. While performing a fire sacrifice, one pronounces the word Swaha, in mantras such as Indraya Swaha and Adityaya Swaha. These mantras are uttered to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead through demigods such as Indra and Aditya. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, Naham tishtam ivaikunte yoginam ridayeshuva tatra tishtam inarada yatra gayanti madbhakta. I am not in Vaikuntha nor in the hearts of the yogis. I remain where my devotees engage in glorifying my activities. It is to be understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not leave the company of His devotees. Fire is certainly devoid of life, but devotees and Brahmins are the living representatives of the Supreme Lord. So this is a very high standard that we are meant to live up to. It is not just superficial and that mechanical, automatic, oh, I'm a devotee, I've been chanting for so many years. No, it means actually representing the Lord. It means through service, having that mood of always wanting to please Him, purity. Therefore, to feed Brahmins and Vaishnavas is to feed the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. It may be concluded that instead of offering fire sacrifices, one should offer foodstuffs to Brahmins and Vaishnavas, for that process is more effective than fire jagya. Text 42. More on the characteristics of Brahmins. In Brahminical culture, a Brahmin's transcendental position is eternally maintained because the injunctions of the Vedas are accepted with faith, austerity, scriptural conclusions, full sense, and mind control and meditation. In this way, the real goal of life is illuminated just as one's face is fully reflected in a clear mirror. We'll read from Prabhupada's purport. Oh, it's a long one. We won't read from Prabhupada's purport today. Okay, we'll continue here tomorrow. And if Krishna allows, we'll conclude the instructions of Prithviraj tomorrow and begin hearing further about his performance of sacrifice. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. It's late, so no time for questions or comments. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Guru Prabhupada ki jai, Pritha Maharaj ki jai, Jaya Govimanande Govaktavinda ki jai.